From KCRW, this is Greater LA. It's the show that connects you to the people and places and the plants of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiatakis. The winter was a wash, and even this week, scattered light rain is keeping Greater LA kind of moist. And you know what that means. Well, not music, but they are singing with all kinds of flowers and lush green foliage. And for LA's community of plant foragers who spend their time hunting down edible plants outdoors, that really is something to sing about. Well, Greater LA producer Zoe Matthew and Juliana Mayo wanted to learn about the art of identifying and eating the plants that Mother Nature has to offer and how they can do that in a way that's good for the local environment. So they took a little stroll with an LA foraging icon. Let's go.
Hi, everyone.
Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
So we just pulled up here in Altadena. We're with Bat Varde, founder of Women Forage SoCal, an all-women foraging group. And we're going to pick some plants from the wild and eat them. How are you doing today, Bat?
I'm doing good. I'm so excited to take you guys out and show you some plants.
I'm excited, too. I'm excited to munch on some stuff.
Yeah, let's do this. Let's eat some weird stuff.
Let's go.
I hope you like mustard.
Oof, I definitely do. Can you tell us a little bit about where we are?
Yeah, totally. So we are at the base of the Angeles National Forest, and I choose this spot because it's really easy to access. And also, there's a lot of invasives down here, and I kind of hate to see it.
So tell people, if they don't know, like, what you mean when you say invasive species.
So an invasive species is a plant that does not belong in this ecosystem. It's not from this area. And in addition to that, it probably puts out so many seeds that it's kind of uncontrollable, and it spreads in a way that literally, quote-unquote, invades the space that would be taken up by a native plant. So this hill is a little bit of a slope. We don't have to go very far.
No, it's okay. Wow, yeah, there's so much, every like foot.
Every foot, yes. So there's a joke about foragers where we go 20 hours a mile. You just want to spend the time and stop and smell the flowers.
So, or eat them.
Or eat them, yes. So this guy is called a white whorehound, and when we say that, we always follow it up with, what did you call me? So white whorehound is, it's an invasive plant. This is not a plant from here, and if you look along the trails, you'll notice that it's become a little bit more widespread than you'd probably want it to be, because this could be a native wildflower, but it's taken up the space of it. So these used to be made into like cough medicines. They're really bitter, so I recommend that if you're gonna eat them or do anything with them, definitely add sugar. But this is in the mint family, and it's sort of like a bitter wild mint. So if you wanted to try it, you totally could.
It looks like mint.
It does kind of look like mint.
I'm not getting like the smell off of it that you get from mint, like the oil or whatever.
Yeah. I'm tasting it right now.
Yeah, you can taste it.
It's very, very, very bitter. Mm-hmm. Wow. It's also kind of like fuzzy.
It's fuzzy.
Not the most pleasant.
Nope.
But you said it's good for you, so.
It might be good for you, yeah.
Bitter medicine.
I think if it tastes bad, it's got to be good for you, right?
Yep. I know you run this group, Women Forage SoCal. What made you want to start like a foraging group specifically for women?
Ooh, that's a good one. So I was a closeted forager my whole life. Like, people would be like, oh my God, this weird girl eating things from the bushes and trees. And then I found a community of foragers, and I realized that within this community, it was mostly like these old white men that wanted to tell women that they couldn't do it without their help. So I realized there was just a really big need for a community where women could meet each other and learn to forage safely in a judgment-free zone where they're not going to be told, no, you can't do it, or no, you can only do it if I'm there. Like,
or lectured to. I feel like that's a big component.
Lectured
is,
to,
you
yes.
Know.
Mansplaining,
yes.
That's a big one. I sort of just wanted a space where that's not happening, and it didn't exist, so I made it. These are some elderflowers.
Oh. What do they smell like?
They smell like a nice Saint Germain cordial.
It's very good right now in this hot weather.
Yes. I really like making elderflower jelly because it has this delicious floral taste. And if you have ever smelled a flower and thought, wow, I really want to eat that, you can actually do that with a lot of flowers that are very fragrant. And elderflower is one of those flowers. Our elderberries are actually native here. So with the elderberries and the elderflowers, we tell folks just to be a little more responsible in their foraging and not take much because they are native and we do want to see more of them. So if you want to see more of them, you should probably leave some berries for the birds to eat and poop out somewhere else.
How did you first get into, you said you were a closeted forager, like what was your kind of introduction to foraging?
So I'm Middle Eastern and a lot of the fruits I grew up eating were like loquats and mulberries and things that you just couldn't buy in the store because they didn't have the shelf life or whatever to be, you know, wanted to be in the stores. And as a result of that, I had to find the trees and I would take like my friends with me and then their parents would be like, stop hanging out with that girl. So I stopped taking my friends with me, but I continued to do it. And that was where the closeted part came from. Look, more mustard.
Wow.
Isn't that exactly what we were looking for?
So yeah, tell us about the mustard.
The mustard sucks. It's everywhere. It's a big sign of colonization, which really, really is just a big slap in the face to, like, indigenous folks. Sadly, the Spanish colonizers used mustard seeds as a way to mark their trails because when they would bloom, you'd see these bright yellow trails through the mountains and you'd know how to get from this mission to that mission.
So how can people do their part and getting rid of the mustard?
You can eat it. You can eat every part of it. You can eat the flowers to the roots. Some folks kimchi the roots or kimchi the whole thing. I wish I knew how to do that. I've tried it and I think it's delicious. There's this really amazing Indian food recipe. I think it's just called saag. But somebody made it at one of our potlucks recently with a bunch of mustard and wild radish and all these invasives that we foraged, and it was delicious. Here's some mustard flowers for you guys to try.
And I'm just supposed to eat this, pop it in my mouth?
Yep, you can eat the whole thing.
It tastes kind of vegetal.
So how do people get involved, like if they want to come out with you and do one of these excursions?
So we have a monthly potluck for all of our foraging friends to come meet other foraging friends, and we like to take a walk together as part of our meeting. But also if anyone's interested in like a private forage, they can always reach out and hire me one-on-one. Here's some blackberries.
Oh, what?
Don't know if these guys are ripe yet. These guys will usually be more ripe in July.
Invasive or not?
So we have a native blackberry. There are invasive blackberries too, though. These, I've actually never seen them flower before, and I thought they were the native ones all this time, but I think they are actually the invasive ones.
Interesting.
So the native ones have much longer and wispier, like, white petals, and the invasive ones have sort of more bunchy, almost strawberry-looking flowers. And they're everywhere, and it helps to eat them, and they're tasty. Yeah, they're not in season yet. But come July.
Do they taste like the blackberries you would get at the store?
Better.
Better.
So much better, yeah. Eating fruit and food from outside, like, and just straight off the tree is so much better than getting it from the store because usually when you get something from the store, it's been there for a while and it's probably been picked before it was ripe. It's like that aha moment when you have a tomato that was grown in your backyard and ripened on the vine, and you're like, oh my God, this is what they're supposed to taste like. And you'll have like those aha moments over and over and over just from foraging. Once you pick it yourself at like the peak ripeness, you will never want to go back.
Those are the voices of Greater LA producers Zoe Matthew and Juliana Mayo talking with Bat Varde, founder of Women Forage SoCal. Now, if you want to know more about some of the edible plants that they found on their excursion, or find out how to head out on your own adventure with Bat and her foraging friends, head to our website, kcrw.com/GLA.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
More now of Greater LA on KCRW. And yeah, you just heard about the scourge of invasive mustard in the hills all around LA. So let's talk to some folks who are taking a creative approach to getting rid of it. Jennifer Toy is the leader of Test Plot, which is a community-based group focused on habitat restoration. Hi, Jennifer.
Hello.
Aaron Berkowitz is an artist, educator, and certified California naturalist. Hi, Aaron.
Hi there.
Jennifer, tell us about this project that teamed your group, Test Plot, up with Aaron and a clothing line called Older Brother. You guys are making clothes out of this and colored clothing, correct?
Correct. Test Plot is an organization that helps community members steward or take care of public lands. And we take a sort of an experimental approach, testing and teaching methods of native gardening, land practices, ecological restoration, and stewardship. And so Aaron actually introduced me to Max from Older Brother, who had this idea to take the mustard that you see all over the Santa Monica Mountains and upcycle it into a dye product for his clothing brand. So when we do a lot of our work, if we leave the mustard on the ground, it becomes a fire hazard. And if we remove it, it often goes into the green bin or landfill. So I really love the idea of creatively reusing.
So it's not going to the landfill. It's not being, you know, tinder for the next wildfire that could be catastrophic. What are you doing with the mustard to make it dye? I mean, how does that work? Aaron, I'll ask you that question.
Yeah, we create a dye with it, essentially brewing it like a tea. And the company Older Brother is set up for dyeing massive amounts. They create a line of clothing using all natural dyes. So we were able to harvest hundreds of pounds of the invasive mustard, brewing it like a tea in this large quantity, and extracting essentially this powerful yellow dye from it, which they utilized on their current line of clothing. So like Jen was saying, we were able to utilize what would otherwise just become this invasive plant that would have headed to the landfill. We were able to make something with it before that.
Jennifer, what does a normal Test Plot clearance look like? I mean, how do you guys, do you just go hand pick it? I mean, how do you get it all up out of the ground?
Well, every plot is different. We currently have 8 plots. Mustard is pretty common, so several of our sites have that. And it really depends on kind of how invasive it is, what the existing plants are that are there, and what folks want to do. So, yeah, sometimes we'll just go in and pull it, roots and shoots. Sometimes we've tried solarization. We've tried sheet mulching. There's a lot of different ways to think about preparing your site.
We heard a little bit about the history of mustard from our previous guest. It sounds like it does a lot of damage to the ecosystem.
Yeah, mustard's really interesting. It's an ancient plant that's endemic to Eurasia and really now can be found all over the world. It came to California in the 1700s and is now present in, I think, like half of the California coastal scrub plant community, which is where like most of our cities are and which is threatened. And there's like many reasons for why it does so well. Its seeds can germinate within 48 hours of rainfall, and it outcompetes native plants, which can take 3 to 9 months longer to establish. It's also allelopathic, which means it releases toxins that deter neighboring root and mycorrhizal growth. And in the summer, the skeletons of the kind of tall, dried-out stalks, which this year have been like up to 12 feet high because of the amazing rainfall we've had, they stay there and they serve as fire ladders to nearby tree canopies.
And when those mustard plants are gone, do you put other plants in place, more native plants that are indigenous to this geography?
Yeah, so at Elephant Hill, the area that we worked on with Older Brother to clear, it's one of Northeast LA's largest remaining open spaces. And so we planted a lot of sages and buckwheats and coyote brush and monkey flower, lots of plants that are part of that coastal sage grub community from the area.
Aaron, when we're talking about the clothing itself, you know, the clothes look very practical, made of, you know, pretty sturdy materials, lots of pockets, almost like something you could do this kind of gardening in, right? That's the kind of, it's sort of like the wardrobe for gardening. Is that what you were thinking?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the company Older Brother has this concept of creating clothing that is very much engaging with the environment where it's made. So it's absolutely clothing that could be worn for gardening, for removing invasive species like what we use to dye the clothing itself. So it's kind of this full circle story they're telling with this line.
The full circle story, and really it's a story about sustainability too, right? That's what we're talking about.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, this is something that, unfortunately, for better or worse, the mustard in some form is here to stay. So being able to utilize it, this is a very sustainable material that will be around for a long time. So removing it from the land and utilizing it for this purpose, I think, is part of that full circle.
Did sustainability extend to other parts of the production process for these clothes as well?
I can't speak to that too much. That's something that Max, the owner of the company Older Brother, would know more about. But yes, absolutely. I mean, I think they have a very small scale production. Everything is made locally in Los Angeles. And all of the clothing made by Older Brother is dyed naturally with plants. So moving forward, that is going to grow, I think, into a more sustainable practice by using these local, extremely abundant invasive plants. It's something that company is moving towards.
It's certainly a unique process, an interesting one, and an important one, too. Jennifer Toy from Test Plot, Aaron Berkowitz of Burbo Studio. Thanks to you both for speaking with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
More now of Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Every spring, those unmistakable blooms make their way to a street or a drive near you. For a few weeks every year, the festive and messy jacaranda trees fill your life with their distinctive purple colors and sweet smell. And then they purge all those petals everywhere to remind you they were there. But it's already late May, and that has some folks asking, where are all the jacaranda blooms this year? Well, journalist Mark Gazansky has been pondering that question himself. He recently looked into it for the LA Times, and he's here to tell us what he found. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
It's nice to have you. I'll start with a bit of a personal question. What's your jacaranda hot take? Do you love them or hate them?
Oh, I love them. I'm a jacarandista.
Yeah. Jacarandista. This is a new term that you have just coined on Greater LA.
Good for me. Well, you know, I don't know if I have.
Oh, really?
It's an Argentinian tree. It's a native of Argentina and Bolivia. So I bet you there are folks walking around La Paz who describe themselves as jacarandistas.
Yeah, yeah. Well, how the hell did they get here if they're from down there?
There was a pioneering horticulturist named Kate Sessions down San Diego way. Back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, when folks were really intent on promoting Southern California as a tropical paradise. And Kate Sessions brought in seeds and plants from all over the world, including Northern Argentina and Bolivia. And she got them going in San Diego. And word has it that she's the one who started them up in L.A.
And here we are talking about why are they so late this spring, and I wonder, you know, was it the rain? Was it the wet winter? Are we just overthinking this? What's going on?
You know, I felt that they were super late because I've got another tree story coming up for the Times that's all about trees in LA to love in addition to jacarandas, and we had it scheduled for, you know, a couple weeks ago, and there wasn't a jacaranda blossom in sight, and we kept postponing it. And finally, my excellent editor over there, Brittany Levine Beckman, said, people are asking, what's up with the jacarandas? So I had the tremendously fun and interesting assignment of calling people who know the answers to this up and saying, what's up? And that's where I learned about this still very mysterious substance called florigen. Florigen is like the wake up, wake up, wake up call from Samuel L. Jackson in Do the Right Thing. Except instead of talking to Spike Lee, florigen is talking to these dormant flower buds that have been hanging out on the branches of jacaranda trees since last summer. And they're just waiting for the call.
Wake up! Wake up, wake up, wake up! Up you wake, up you wake, up you wake, up you wake!
And there he is! Samuel L. Jackson himself. Well, why haven't they gotten the call though? What's going on?
It's not hot enough. Like every day that we wake up and we see that it's like 52 degrees and cloudy again, the jacaranda trees are just the same way. They're like, nope, not happening.
It has been a little dreary lately. So, all right, florigen has something to do with, you know, the Samuel L. Jackson of the jacaranda community. What about all the rain? Mark,
yeah.
I mean, we had a lot of rain. That's good for plants, right?
Up to a certain point, it's good for plants. It was really good for the super bloom that we saw in wildflowers. And it may turn out that this is just a bonkers jacaranda season. I've heard that from some of the plant physiology experts, that all the rain may yet deliver an eye-popping, or an even more than usually eye-popping, jacaranda blossoming. But it's not water that triggers blossoming. In wildflowers, it's photo period, or just how the days are getting longer for spring wildflowers. But jacarandas want, and many other trees too, they want more assurance. They want to blossom when their pollinators are going to be out flying around. So that's why the water isn't the key to jacaranda blossoming.
Do we know when they're going to come? Do we have any idea?
Oh, or is
it just waiting?
They're on their way.
Just waiting for Samuel L. Jackson.
They're on their way.
They're on,
if you,
on
if
their
you
way.
Put your hand to your ear and listen for purple rain, it's out there in the distance. Listen.
Yeah. That's what we're listening for, purple rain. All right, we'll wait for the paisley one to tell us about the jacarandas.
It's coming. You can see, we can see, I saw one tree that was like, hell yeah, I'm going for it. It was right off the 10 between the former Staples Center and the Times printing plant. And it was like, I'm going for it. I don't care. The rest of you can follow me.
Before you let us go, Mark, tell us, I mean, what is it about jacarandas that you know, that divides people so much? Because there's some folks like you just love them. You're on team purple, right?
And then
other people just, because they're messy too. They get everywhere, those blooms.
Yeah, we've given a good amount of airtime to that. I think if you get a jacaranda hater, that's fine. You know, we still in this country have the right not to like jacarandas. But I think the next question is, well, what are two or three LA plants that you do love? And that's the start of a great conversation, and it's an important conversation to have, because then you could start to form a community of neighbors that care about trees, and you could contact City Plants and get some trees planted for free in your neighborhood, and that would be a step in the direction of establishing more equity in LA's tree canopy.
I have learned so much. Mark Kazansky, who wrote about this year's late-blooming jacarandas for the LA Times. Mark, thanks for coming on. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
That's all the time we have for today. Whew. At this time tomorrow, KCRW's The Business has Tony McNamara, the creator and showrunner of The Great, that satirical and raunchy Hulu show. That's tomorrow in this time slot. Next week, we are back. Hope you'll join us and come along with us on our journeys next week on GLA. Juliana Mayo, Zoe Matthews, Sonia Geis, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Amy Talk, Carlos Ramirez, Sue Margulies, and Christian Bordahl all helped put the show together this evening. I'm Steve Chitakis. Thanks for your time and your ear. Have a great night.